Start immediately according to the agenda. And without further ado, I will give the floor to Professor Ekaterini Tsalabouni. She is a professor of the New Testament at the Department of Social Theology at the Theological School of the Aristotle University of Thessaloniki. She is a member of the BOD of the Volos Academy of Theological Studies. I believe that you all know her. So I will read the title of her presentation. He has filled the hungry with good things, an ecological reading of the Christian eschatological vision of food and righteous abundance. Professor, you have the floor for the next 20 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for making me the honor to include me in the speakers of this very interesting and relevant conference. The title of my speech has already been announced by dear Nikos, so allow me to start with some introductory remarks. Securing the everyday food and the equal access to it has always been a request and a pressing concern for people. However, the dramatic developments over the last decades with the ongoing wars, the pandemic, climate change, and the radical change of the politico-economic landscape led to the abandonment of many ambitious targets for sustainable development. The victims of these developments are the most vulnerable social groups and the weaker countries. Now, the principles of biodiversity and equal participation in all goods has been replaced by the de facto enforcement of the law of the strongest, who keep for themselves the quality goods and then use their power and violence, not always a physical one, to oppress the environment and those that are in a weaker economic, social, or political condition. According to the World Health Organization, in 2023, 733 million people, accounting for 9.2% of the global population, suffered from hunger, and 2.33 billion people, accounting for 28.9% of the world population, experienced some kind of insecurity in accessing food. So they had to reduce the quantity and quality of food or be deprived of it. Finally, 2.83 billion people, about 35% of the world population, didn't have healthy food. This equals a missed opportunity of children to develop, to grow as they should. And for adults, this means lack of the right conditions for their life and progress. And this leads also to displacements and to refugee streams. The ambitious vision for sustainability and eco-justice has now been forgotten. Also, the older model of the dominant and anthropocentric prioritization and organization of people's relationship amongst them or with the environment is now winning more and more ground. People, and in fact those that have power, are those that share the food, distribute food and goods in a manner that serve their own interests, confirm or increase their dominance. The voices that warn against the impact of this worldview are many. However, we need to reflect on the stance of religious communities, explore whether their principles and values allow these practices or they are incompatible with them. Quite often, we have underlined the need to develop an ethos of ecological empathy and justice and resistance against any inequality. In this case, however, one must wonder to what degree our church tradition has this element of critical resistance to the unfair distribution of food and water. Could this become a theological proposal for food, a theology of food? And what would be the significance of such a proposal today? These research questions form the basis of this paper. For this paper, we chose to talk about the witness of the Gospels, which resonates the experience of the faith and the ethos of the first Christian communities, early Christian communities. Indeed, the Gospels include many references to food and the labor of people to ensure it. In the Gospels that save the teaching and the work of Jesus Christ, he recognizes the importance of food. Jesus participates in suppers, in dinners, and he intervenes in order to feed the people, and quite often he attributes to food a deeper symbolic meaning. This is why it would be useful to explore to what extent all these references also refer to particular stance towards food and can indeed form the basis of a modern theology of food. In this paper, the references will be based on two ideological lenses which complement each other and share some characteristics. The first one is the ecofeminist reading of biblical texts, which started being applied in biblical studies mainly during the 80s and combines the feministic hermeneutics and the ecological empathy. Its key principles are the need for social transformation, for survival and justice, but this means a radical transformation in the way we're thinking, keeping our distances from the dualistic ways to understand the world and rejection of the current hierarchy. A new value system, a new system of values and a new ethos is promoted. Equality and acknowledgement of the biodiversity, the diversity, cultural and social one, participation, reciprocity, mutuality and non-violence. Also, it includes a review of our relationship with nature, which shouldn't be instrumental anymore, but it should have an intrinsic and mutual value. So we're talking about a paradigm shift from the anthropocentric to a more biocentric understanding of nature. It would be useful for humanity to draw learnings from the nature and its wisdom, to find out more, for example, more about the acceptance of diversity and mutuality and interdependence. The second ideological and theoretical lens is the sustainability hermeneutics. It is a rather new development in the context of the ecological interpretation as it has been developed by the so-called Earth Bible Project at the end of the 20th century. An important contribution to this new perspective is the study by Tina Dickestein-Nielsen in 2023, which proposes a systematic theoretical model and introduces this term in the biblical studies. This hermeneutical model combines the principles and targets of sustainability with biblical texts. It explores whether the texts consider aspects of sustainability. It takes into account three pillars, environment, equality, and economy, which are considered to be the pillars of sustainability. The ecofeminist hermeneutics and the sustainability hermeneutics are not a system of hermeneutical strategies. It is rather a different view of the text, which is driven by specific principles and aimed to specific targets. So let's talk about Jesus and food. As already mentioned, the food is a significant part of the miracles and teaching of Jesus. And let me give you some examples from the gospel. So, my first point is about the positive stance of Jesus towards food. In the gospels, there is an interesting comparison between Jesus and John the Baptist, which possibly represents and resonates a theological discussion between the members of the early church and the disciples of the Baptist. Food is involved in this discussion. An important characteristic of John the Baptist is fasting, while Jesus is criticized for participating in dinners, eating and drinking without following the ascetic methods of the Baptist. Their attitude towards food is combined with other comparison points, which probably indirectly are linked to food. Jesus is around the area near the Lake of Galilee, a place of abundance and fertility, while John the Baptist is in desert. It is important for this paper that Jesus disconnects ethical purity from food because he's very clear in challenging the traditional distinction in pure and impure food. In Mark's and Matthew's Gospels, it is underlined that what makes people impure is not the food, but their intention. Mark talks about pride and avarity as sources of impurity. On the other hand, Luke approaches the same topic with a positive proposal. What truly make people pure are not the purity of food, but the generosity towards the poor. The connection of purity, food, and benefaction reverses this reasoning of pure and impure and lays the foundation for a different type of justice that means that everybody should participate in food. My second point is the recognition of the necessity of food. This redefinition of the value of food is confirmed in the event where the disciples go through the fields and Jesus says that the need to satisfy the biological need of hunger is more important than the sanctity of the religious holiday. Jesus made the so-called gift miracles, the miracles of material culture. He feeds a large amount of people, men, women, and children. He turns water into wine. It fills the nets of his disciples with fish. And he takes these initiatives without being asked to. They don't expect this from him, but he does it. His gift is rich. And these simple goods that allow people to survive are offered to everybody present. The miracle of feeding 5,000 people includes three interesting points. First one, Jesus blesses the food by attributing a sanctity in the process of sharing the same table, and recognizes the value of this food. This value is highlighted by the information that is given that the disciples at the end gathered the food that was the leftovers. And this was done in order for nothing to be lost. Second point, these people share equally the few food that exists. Mark insinuates that, but Matthew is very specific about it, saying that those that participated in the supper were not only men, but also women and children. And third point, the disciples become the means through which the blessing of abundant food is offered, gifted to the people present. Now, let's talk about the inclusive and equal participation in food. Contrary to the practices of that era, where dinners were organized on the basis of social and gender discriminations, Jesus shares his table with various people, not only men, and not only people of the same social position or ethical purity. In his teaching, he urges the people listening to him to invite in their table the poor, the disabled, the blind. When you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. The same concept is repeated in his parable for the royal supper in Luke's Gospel, where the king is presented to share his table with the poor and the crippled. So Jesus reverses the social hierarchy and challenges discrimination and lack of access to food. It is extremely interesting. The words he is using are extremely interesting because the roles are reversed and the Lord serves his servants. Now, let's talk about the connection of food with the kingdom. The connection of food with the kingdom and the smoothness and fair participation in it is often found in the Gospels. The image of the shared eschatological supper comes from the Judaic tradition, but it becomes central in Jesus' teaching. The arrival of Jesus in the world is connected with abundance, the reversal of social discrimination, and the fair redistribution of goods. There is a clear reference to Psalm 107, which, however, makes references only to feeding the poor without talking about redistribution. But the life and teaching of Jesus will confirm this prophecy. The eschata and the kingdom are directly linked to food, which is a sign that the kingdom is already here. It is characteristic, for example, that the food and the supper dominate the narrations of Gospels when the resurrected Christ made his appearance. And this connection of the joint supper with kingdom is ever more intense. Now, let's talk about the Eucharistic transformation of food. This image of the shared post-Easter supper is not just a narrative element with some intertextual allusions to the prophetic eschatological vision. It is also a central element of the experience of the kingdom and of the eschata as experienced by the members of the ecclesiastic community through the Eucharist. The Eucharistic references in the gospel descriptions of the risen Christ appearance are obvious. It is important that the revelation of the kingdom of God in the presence of the ecclesiastic community, meaning the Eucharist, is connected to a shared supper where all members participate equally. In the Eucharistic event, as delivered through the Gospels and is then received by the Church in its liturgical act, the material which is necessary for the biological life and well-being of people is transformed into the body and blood of Christ. Now, let's talk about the spiritual dimension of food and its identification with Jesus. This positive transformation of material food can be seen also in another particularity of Jesus' teaching. In John's Gospel, Jesus is compared to the Easter lamb. where no bone is broken. And Jesus is self-characterized as the bread that descends from the sky and the living water. The Eucharist references are obvious here, but the decision of Jesus to use these images to self-define again raises the issue of the meaning and sanctity of food. The food in the form of a grain also dominates the parable of sour. Here, the Word of God and the Sermon of the Kingdom identifies with the seed that falls on every type of earth. And the desire of people to experience this kingdom is described as hunger and as thirst. And according to Matthew, this search connects to fairness and justice. And my last point is about the fair participation in food as a responsibility of church members. This connection between the material and the spiritual and the emphasis on justice, fairness, and equal participation in goods highlights the responsibility of church members to fight for equal access of everybody to the goods offered by nature. When the disciples ask from Jesus to leave the crowd following him in order to go search for food, he urges them to give food to people. Through the act of Eucharist, blessing, and the distribution of food, he teaches them the responsibility they have to equally share their belongings in a shared table of Eucharist and justice. With his acts, he challenges the dominant social discriminations, and the joint supper becomes a place of inclusion. The integration of food and equal participation in the eschatological vision of the kingdom highlights its importance now and underlines the church's responsibility in sustainability. Jesus taught us that we should ask for our daily bread from our Father, and this concern is still primary today. The inclusion of this request in the Lord's Prayer underlines the recognition of the importance of food by connecting it to the care of God and its rational use. The connection of food with the Eucharist and the vision of kingdom acknowledges its value and highlights its eschatological perspective. And according to the final judgment parables, the food and its rational use, fair use, will be a criterion. If everything already mentioned were vital for people in the first century after Christ, they are equally important today. The numbers, the figures about poverty and hunger are very high. For church today, I think, the way in which food is treated by Jesus in the Gospel raises some new questions. How often does the church discourse criticizes avarice and greediness? Quite often, greediness and avarice are compared with fasting, which is a spirituality act. How often this fasting is understood as resistance to injustice, as rational use of food? To what extent does church talks and highlights the sanctity of food, and how is this message conveyed to its members? Maybe a theological discourse on food, which could take into consideration the biblical witness and its liturgical reception. This could probably lead to a new ethos for the members of the church community, and that could be our contribution to the effort for sustainability and justice. In this word, thank you.
Ευχαριστούμε πολύ την κυρία Τσαλαμπούνη.
Very much, Professor Τσαλαμπούνη, for respecting the agenda, but first and foremost for her well-documented and very interesting speech. She presented the biblical prerequisites, if you wish, for developing a theology of food. We keep the eco-feminist approach to the biblical texts as something very innovative, very original, if I might say, at least for Greek reality. And also the dimension of connection, the ecological empathy to social justice is also very important. And of course, the Eucharistic dimension of food without leaving behind the eschatological dimension of the witness of the gospel. The right use of food is a criterion for the judgment. Have time, we might have one or two questions when it comes to the first speech. So you can ask questions to Professor Tsalabouni. I can see Nino, Mrs. Nino, would like to ask a question to Professor Tsalabouni. Thank you very much for this very interesting speech. We know that the first role of the people in the church was to serve in the common meals. Today, that this concept was lost, sharing the bread in our modern society. We have lost the concept also of community, of communal meals. Do you believe that we need the people, the diakoni with liturgical character, maybe they should come back to their first role, the role of social offering, of social help? Or do you believe that it was only something of that? So the deacons of the early church had such a role, the practical role of serving, helping to the common meals, but they also have a liturgical role. Stephanos, Saint Stephan and Saint Philip also participate in sharing the gospel. In my opinion, we should revisit a lot of things. Today, our church is organized in a completely different way. And of course, history changes things, and some concepts develop and institutions develop due to the historical conditions. The church has changed. However, yes, in my opinion, we should revisit the role of deacons, and first of all, deacons themselves in their parishes should take up such role. But why not the other members of the church community should take up that role, helping others? In my opinion, what is missing today is our own participation into serving the church, and also we should revisit our role as people in the world. Sometimes we want, are we here to save only our soul or also to serve the world and our fellow human beings? This is an existential question for Christians today. The apostles themselves served other people. So it is an apostolic tradition. It is a tradition that comes from Jesus because he was the first that helped others. He washed the feet of other people, and he said that the Lord himself in his kingdom is going to serve you. So Jesus was the first example that we should all follow. Is there any other question? Yes, Mr. Chris Durante.
I really like this idea of revisiting the role of deacons that you just mentioned. Could you elaborate on that? I've often called for the revisitation of the deaconate, to not just have them be, you know, minor priests helping out, which is what we've reduced them to, but really call for, you know, different types of roles to be reactivated. So, yeah, I want to hear more about that, because and how it connects with larger social justice issues. And
that was the idea of, yes, okay, thank you. Ναι, ευχαριστώ πάρα πολύ.
Thank you very much. Nino brought this issue about. I would agree with you both that we should revisit the roles of both the clergy and deacons in the church. But why not we should revisit the institution of church in the world? This is where those things are interconnected, in my opinion. This would be possible on the level of a parish, on a local church. Maybe we are discussing about different realities. Maybe in the United States, where the church community has a different role, maybe it is a point of reference for Orthodox Christians compared to other Orthodox communities, for example, in Greece. That could be done more easier. And maybe the example should come from your practice to Greece. And maybe you should urge us to revisit our ways, so to say, and to revisit the role. In my opinion, I don't want to limit this concept only to the deacons and the clergy. I agree with you that nowadays deacons are helping the clergy, and it is just, let's say, a forefront to becoming priest later on. But in my opinion, we should revisit the role of all the members of the church, and especially we should revisit the role of laity. The believers in Orthodoxy should revisit their role. This is especially in Greece. Maybe where you live, things are different. But in my opinion, we should redefine ourselves as members of the church in the world. Thank you very much. I think that Mrs. Yanutaki would also like to ask a question. When it comes to the role of laity, of believers, the houses of peace have an extra role. This is an example from the local church, the so-called houses of peace. Is this institution something that you believe? No, this is a very good practice. It is not a generalized practice. I'm sure that there are a lot of good examples, but we should revisit our way of thinking generally, all the members of the church. And, of course, we should allow church to be inclusive. And why not the way that we understand Eucharist, this common Eucharistic table meal, that it becomes a part of, it becomes an effort of limiting our identity compared to the others. This is why a theology of food is necessary nowadays, and maybe the biblical text can give us a starting point. The Bible will not solve all our problems today, cannot give answers. We still talk about a human-based approach, but we should now adopt a more holistic approach of the Christian tradition and our experience in the church. Then only this biblical model could be enriched and become an example, a paradigm of life in the church.